Geek Radio Daily. For looky here, finally Fracking Friday, babies. What you gonna do in here? Oh, yeah.
That was my lame, I've blown my thrown out DJ voice from the 70s.
Yeah. Good times. Good times.
All right, daddy-o.
The Wolfman's in town, baby. And tonight we'll be playing some Jackbox. We've got the new Jackbox pack, which has some very interesting games. You should come by and join us for all the madness and stuff that it is. Welcome to the 22nd of October. Still not saying October. Don't know why. Maybe it's something in the water. With the fine folks from GeekRadioDaily.com, the folks bringing it to you today, the man that's going to be getting the same question asked of him every time you see him this weekend. That's podcast user Siegfried.
Have you been drinking this whole past 2 minutes?
2 minutes? Don't limit him. Hi, everybody. I'm the wonderful Billy Flynn.
Which lunatic asylum did they get you out of?
I don't know. Pick one.
In 1878, Thomas Edison received a patent for the quadruplex telegraph repeaters. The patent describes circuits that operate each other so that messages are repeated automatically into one circuit by the receiving instrument of the other circuit rather than instead of the finger key being operated by hand.
Thank God. 1926, J. Gordon Whitehead, a McGill University student, sucker punches famous magician Harry Houdini in the stomach, and Houdini will die 8 days later on October 31st. The popular myth is that the punches what killed him, but no, he had appendicitis, which he got from the punch. So I got you.
1938, former Bell telephone physicist Chester F. Carlson makes the first Xerox copy using a sulfur coating on a zinc plate, vigorously rubbed with a handkerchief to apply an electrostatic charge. Funny, when I vigorously rub the copy machine, everybody calls me a weirdo.
1955, the black and white British science fiction series Quatermass 2 premieres on the BBC. It's really worth the time and trouble.
1975, the Soviet spacecraft Venera 9 soft lands on Venus.
1982, the official grand opening ceremony is held for Epcot Center at Walt Disney World over 3 days.
Same day, same year, Universal releases the horror film Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, directed by Tommy Lee Wallace and starring Tom Atkins, Stacey Nelkin, and Dan O'Herlihy.
The night no one came home. 2001, Grand Theft Auto 3 was released, popularizing a genre of open-world action-adventure video games, as well as bringing controversy around violence in video games and, you know, beverage choices.
2004, Sony releases the horror film The Grudge, directed by Takashi Shimizu, and starring Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jason Baer, Katie Strickland, Clea DuVall, and Bill Pullman.
Don't forget Ted Raimi, not in a fat suit this time. Birthdays?
Saffron Burroughs is 49 from Wing Commander, Deep Blue Sea, Time Code, and Peter Pan.
Valera Galeno is 56 from Hot Shots, Hot Shots Part D, Four Rooms, My Thoughts.
Bob Odenkirk, 59, from Ben Stiller Show, Mr. Show, Cable Guy, Movie 43, which isn't as bad. It's not great, but it's got fun. Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Jeff Goldblum is 69 from 10 Speed and Brown Shoe, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Buckaroo Banzai, The Fly, Jurassic Park, Independence Day, Grand Budapest Hotel, Thor Ragnarok, Dracula in the Goosebumps CD-ROM game.
We've also got Christopher Lloyd is 83 from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Taxi, Star Trek III, Buckaroo Banzai, Back to the Future, Clue, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Adam's Family.
Derek Jacobi is 83 from Day of the Jackal, The Secret of Nim, Dead Again, Gladiator, Golden Compass, and Tomb Raider.
And wasn't he the master for a little while?
Yeah.
Born this day no longer with us in 1903, Jerome Lester Horowitz, better known as Curly Howard.
Oh, 1920, Timothy Leary, American psychologist and best friend of LSD. Turn on, tune in, drop out, set and setting, and think for yourself and question authority. And now you know why Tony Todd says what he does.
1942, Annette Funicello, The Mickey Mouse Club, Shaggy Dog, and a bunch of beach movies.
1943, Catherine E. Coulson, the log lady on Twin Peaks, and of course, was the mother of Agent Coulson.
CBS, we've got a new SWAT, Magnum PI, and Blue Bloods.
ABC, it's Shark Tank in 2020.
NBC has Home Sweet Home and a new Dateline, Think Bright.
Fox, WWE, Friday Night Smackdown.
Brother CW, Monkeys, Donuts, and X-Men on a new Penn and Teller Fool Us. Nancy and her friends pursue an unexpected lead from a podcaster at a convention for amateur sleuths while on the trail of the Frozen Hearts killer, and they end up unraveling eerie clues concerning a homicide from the 1950s on a new Nancy Drew.
A 1950s Nancy Drew? That's weird. Freeform has a Family Guy marathon.
AMC filmmakers and actors discuss cinematic world wars, global plagues, mass famines, zombie apocalypses, and more, and how fans of these types of films may be the ones who survive when real life collapse inevitably happens on Eli Roth's Whatever Horror Show.
Yeah, yeah. FX is the 2016 Ghostbusters. There's some good stuff there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic collection of skits. It's a shame that there's only three Ghostbusters in it, because two of the characters are the same. FXX, Simpsons Marathon with Boy Meets Curl and The Color Yellow.
FXM has Us.
BBC, wait, what? A Few Good Men on BBC America.
Paramount has The Addams Family, the movie.
I got very confused because I thought you said BBC America, and then you said Us, and I'm like, well, we're A Few Good Men. Sippy has Cam and Lauren look for a way to escape from the dead while they remain trapped in the basement of the morgue on a new Day of the Dead.
Turner Classic Movies has Jason and the Argonauts, and that's awesome, but we're watching the Lifetime Movie Network. Wedding planner Angie is surprised when her strange brother Michael comes to visit to their parents' funeral with his fiancée, which is odd. Olivia, hoping to repair the relationship, agrees to help them plan their wedding and stuff. Soon she's wrapped up in the drama of Olivia and her bridesmaid, one of whom accuses Olivia of murdering her husband. But when that bridesmaid is found dead, Angie becomes suspicious of Olivia, especially when she learns Olivia previously dated a millionaire who died from a nasty fall. Kristen Vaganos and Benedict Mazurek star in For Love or Murder.
The wonderful Billy Flynn looks at what Chad and Abby are up to now. If you know what TV show they're on this week, you could win yourself a prize. It's your Further Adventures of Chad and Abby update. Chad takes Madeline, Abby, and the kids on a game show so they can try and win $10,000. Now, Madeline's so nervous about this whole thing that she cost them the money. But everyone forgives her. I mean, it's going to be all right. All is well with the Matron Dynasty, the Childbearer Clan, the Mata Familis. Hashtag Chabby. Forever.
You've got mail.
Hi, geeks. This is about your 18th October episode. Flintsters, I'm with you. If the original Pledge of Allegiance was good enough for Porky Pig, it's good enough for all of us. That was a World War II era Warner Brothers cartoon. Yeah, yeah. You did a great job citing other examples of motivations for heroes in groups and as individuals that didn't include
and the American way.
I doubt there's one American way anymore, especially now with so many people convinced that everyone who disagrees with them is an enemy. Stay safe. That is from Bill. Well, Bill, that is damned insightful and 100% true. Hey, if there's other slogans that you prefer the original of, why don't you let us know what it is, including Where's the Beef? Drop a note to podcast at geekradiodaily.com, or, of course, you can send a voicemail or text message. Use the magic numbers.
510-GRD-CROW.
Didn't the original Pledge of Allegiance have In Beef We Trust?
Travis I. Sivart's exciting novel, Silver and Smith and the Doppelganger's Gate, is now available. An artifact that may reveal a secret buried by history. Two powerful corporations want it, each for very different reasons. One to manipulate genetics, the other to uncover lost technology. Silver and Smith are hired to find the relic that could reveal a conspiracy that spans from Atlantis to other worlds. Pulp-style, fast-paced adventure with memorable characters that you'll love. Find this book and others on Amazon or at bit.ly/TravisBooks. That's bit.ly/TravisBooks.
Hey, everybody, it's Tony Todd. You're listening to Geek Radio Daily. Stay tuned or drop out. God bless you.
See? I'm not saying that he takes LSD. I'm just saying that he's kind of inferring it. And I'm also not saying Candyman.
I got an idea for a movie.
Doesn't everybody?
Sure. And sometimes they come out. What's out this time, sir?
Wait, did you just mention Candyman?
Nope, sure didn't.
In nationwide release, we've got set in an outpost of an American newspaper in a fictional 20th century French city. It brings to life a collection of stories published in the French Dispatch magazine. We've got Bill Murray, Timothy Chalamet, and Benicio del Toro in the French Dispatch.
And we have the story of Barney, a socially awkward middle schooler, and Ron, his new walking, talking, digitally connected device, which is supposed to be his best friend out of the box, not his friend to the end. Ron's hilarious malfunction, set against the backdrop of the social media age, launched them to an action-packed journey in which boy and robot come to terms with the wonderful messiness of true friendship. Ava Morse, Jack Dylan Grazer star in Ron's Gone Wrong.
I'm curious about that movie, I'm not going to lie. Louis Wayne was many things during his incredible life. Artist, inventor, entrepreneur, trying his best to care for his five sisters and mother. Two events change his life forever. Meeting Emily, the love of his life, and adopting Peter, a stray kitten. They will both become his family and his inspiration to paint the extraordinary images of cats that made him world famous and change the way we see life forever. I know you think it's a Hallmark Channel movie, but not with this cast. Toby Jones and Benedict Cumberbatch star in The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne.
In nationwide and HBO Max release, Paul Atreides, a brilliant and gifted young man born into a great destiny beyond his understanding, must travel to the most dangerous planet in the universe to ensure the future of his family and his people, as malevolent forces explode into conflict over the planet's exclusive supply of the most precious resource in existence, a commodity capable of unlocking humanity's greatest potential. Only those who can conquer their fear will survive. Josh Brolin, Timothée Chalamet, and Cale Boyter star in Dune!
And don't forget Zendaya.
I can never forget Zendaya.
Now, we may be a week or so away from Halloween, but that doesn't mean you can't get your spooky on right now, and Svengoolie's just the cat who can help. This week, he's featuring the story of a deranged scientist who escapes from prison and recruits Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, and the Wolfman to get revenge on his behalf. It's their best team-up until Destruction Kings, but that's a whole other story altogether. See the greats together, Boris Karloff, John Carradine, Lon Chaney Jr., and Glenn Strange in 1944's House of Frankenstein. Only on MeTV.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Geek News!
Taking a look at the world from a geeky point of view. After months of news, photos, theme songs, and years of us talking about it, Netflix released the first teaser for its live-action Cowboy Bebop series. Sort of. The trailer is called The Lost Session, and it shows off John Cho as Spike Spiegel, Daniela Pineda as Faye Valentine, Mustafa Shakir as Jet Black, as they take on the bounty that won't be a part of the actual Netflix show.
And boy, do they drop. Oh, it's so good!
The trailer, which is directed by Greg Jardine, starts off aboard the Bebop, with Jet, Faye, and Spike getting the call for a new bounty. The two chase down a target, or more specifically, chase down the wrong target a couple times, getting into plenty of random fights. The whole thing is set to the show's iconic music and plays with split screen in a few fun ways before the gang inevitably messes up with the bounty and loses out on the cash. And it's nice to get a short preview of what the show might look like. This still isn't an official look of any of the footage that will premiere next season, for the first season. For that, we're going to have to wait for a trailer coming next week.
But it sets aside any worry I had about the show being amazing.
Truth. One thing remains unclear about the Netflix show after the trailer is just how much of the series it will cover. While it's likely to have 10 episodes, like most Netflix series, that's not enough to cover the entire 26-episode anime. It's possible Netflix either condenses the story or will have to wait until future seasons to see the conclusion of the story. Cowboy Bebop will be released on Netflix November 19th. Until then, see ya, Space Cowboy. Watch out for that gangster love.
Fans have been distraught ever since the news of the delay in release dates of several Marvel Cinematic Movies films broke. While attending the red carpet premiere of Eternals, Marvel Studios boss Kevin Feige was asked about the delays, and he confirmed that they were due to production schedules.
It can't be that difficult to wrangle the shooting and production schedules of multiple major tentpole films on the tail end of a pandemic. Pshaw!
Marvel Studios recently announced changes to its entire schedule for 2022 and 2023, pushing back the release of several of the Phase 4 films. This was among the largest shifts in the schedule since the ongoing pandemic began, but it has been confirmed that the delays had nothing to do with the COVID-19, and instead were related to the production of several of the upcoming MCU films.
They only need, like 17 special effects sequences for each flick?
When speaking to Variety at the Eternals world premiere in Los Angeles, Feige revealed that all the Marvel slots are the same, we're just shifting the movies coming out. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness was the first upcoming MCU project to be moved by 6 weeks, which led to the domino effect of all the upcoming MCU films being delayed as well. Feige referred to the gap between two consecutive MCU films now being longer than it usually is. Instead of there being 3 months between Marvel movies, there will now be 5, he stated in the interview.
But...
Benedict Cumberbatch's Stephen Strange will be making an appearance in Spider-Man's No Way Home as well, meaning fans of the franchise will not have to wait as long to see him back on the big screen. But Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is one of the highly anticipated MCU projects. Filming was put on hold earlier this year due to the ongoing pandemic.
But he's a doctor. Couldn't he fix it?
However, the film wrapped principal photography back in April, and the reshoots were meant to be completed by September. However, post-production isn't an easy process either, and it seems like the film was not going to make the March deadline. We know it takes a while to make these movies. That's why they're so good. But that doesn't mean that we have to like it when they change. And until DC puts out a movie that rivals... Make mine Marvel.
Snyder Cut. Gina Carano.
Now, hold on. It is Make Mine Marvel, right?
Gina Carano getting fired by Disney was inevitable. I mean, the last straw for the House of Mouse was her sharing that post comparing being Republican to being Jewish during the Holocaust. So similar. The consequences were swift. Disney described her post as abhorrent and unacceptable and dropped her from The Mandalorian like a hot rock. Her agents followed suit, and Hasbro even ended production of the Cara Dune action figure.
Oh, I was going to use it with my Indiana Jones figures. Boo!
This would likely have happened by now anyway, as Disney now requires anyone working on its productions to be vaccinated against COVID-19, just like Fox News does. And Carano spends most of her days posting anti-vax memes on Twitter. But the one ray of light for her was the Daily Wire's offer of work on movies designed to fight leftist causes.
Yeah, like the tyranny of not killing grandmas.
The first of those was to be White Knuckle, a revenge thriller about truckers. Announced with some fanfare in August, Carano said she was completely ignited for the role, and that the movie made her feel as if I have wings. Well, those wings have now been clipped, as the Daily Wire has canceled the movie.
Cancel culture, right?
The decision appears to be linked to Carano's anti-vax beliefs, with their statements hinting that they're struggling to square shooting a movie with the looming federal vaccine mandates. They said, with the precariousness of the current Hollywood landscape and the remarkable overreach by its ruling class, we made the tough but prudent choice to ride it further out into the Wild West to make movies on our own terms.
What will Ben Shapiro have to say about this? What's that? I'm sorry. Oh, he's one of the owners of the Daily Wire. Oh, I see.
It seems like they're pressing ahead with Terror on the Prairie, a Western in which Carano will play a pioneer fighting against a group of outlaws, which will exclusively, it'll be made exclusively by the Daily Wire website and is planned for release as soon, for release as soon as early 2022.
Well, that's a streaming service I definitely won't be signing up for.
The Daily Wire may get a more realistic Wild West experience than they bargained for if the press on... Oh. The Daily Wire may get more realistic Wild West experience than they bargained for if they press on with plans to make movies with an unvaccinated cast and crew. After all, pioneers and settlers were frequently killed off by cholera, typhoid, tuberculosis outbreaks, so the actors hacking up their lungs as they try to film a Western might just add that crucial touch of realism to Gina Carano's next movie, which really should be The Oregon Trail.
Dead by Daylight has effectively shot itself in the foot thanks to its collaboration with partners Park Avenue Entertainment and Boss Protocol on the Hellraiser NFT. According to their website, Boss Protocol has a license to create NFTs from Hellraiser based on the in-game Pinhead and Chatterer models created by the Dead by Daylight game team. The team at DBD worked with the game division of Boss Protocol, Boss Team Games, which controls some interactive rights to Hellraiser via Park Avenue Entertainment to bring Hellraiser and Pinhead to the popular asymmetrical horror game.
I thought I'd gone to the limits. I hadn't. The Cenobites gave me an experience beyond limits. Pain and pleasure, non-fungible tokens.
A tweet from the official Twitter account states that they had actively consented to their in-game models being used. Behavior worked with Boss Protocol over several months to adapt in-game models for use as NFTs and approved them prior to the release of Pinhead and DBD. The NFTs have a chance to grant access to the hashtag Hellraiser chapter of DBD. It should be noted that while Dead by Daylight is not actively selling NFTs, it is painfully obvious they gave their consent for the in-game model of Pinhead and Chatter so that Boss Protocol could launch their Masters of Horror NFT collection.
We are explorers in the further regions of experience, demons to some, angels to others.
As for how the Dead by Daylight community reacted when faced with the news that they had effectively purchased a DLC, including content that would be used to sell NFTs, well, it'd be an understatement to say that the majority wasn't all too pleased. Content creators such as Pixel Bush Entertainment, a YouTuber who looks extensively at the lore behind the killers and survivors in Dead by Daylight, released a video recently detailing their disappointment with Behavior Interactive and their support for the Hellraiser NFT. The video is titled, "The Hellraiser NFTs and Destruction of Player Goodwill," which seems more than accurate considering the overwhelmingly bleak reaction the reveal of the Hellraiser NFT earned Behavior Interactive.
I believe their response was, "No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering."
After a string of buggy updates, plagues of hackers, and an unpopular new matchmaking system, Behavior's goodwill with the people who played the game was already wearing thin. But the new announcement of involvement with NFT production has rocked the community in a big way, Pixel said. Behavior has always tried to paint itself as a socially conscious company, but this announcement has well and truly buried that notion. The environmental damage of NFTs is well documented, but if Behavior was more upfront about this from the chapter's release, then at least people who morally objected to the Hellraiser's NFT, objected to the Hellraiser NFTs, could have refused to buy the DLC, writing the whole thing off as a failed experiment.
That really sounds like they opened up a Pandora's box.
Pixel brings up some fantastic points. The morality of NFTs is still being debated based around the carbon footprint left by the servers that must run continuously for the NFTs to, for lack of a better term, exist. Especially to fans of the sadomasochistic, hedonistic, and demonic Cenobites. Oh, they're just out-of-the-box thinkers that want you to taste their pleasures.
Screenwriter Seth Graham Smith, who was previously tasked with writing Beetlejuice 2, and I'm not saying that either, has explained why the anticipated Tim Burton sequel still has not happened. It's been over a decade since talk of a sequel to the 1988 hit film that I just mentioned first began, with various reports indicating the film wouldn't be made, followed almost immediately by reports stating the opposite. The process has been a challenging one, and fans continue to wonder what will happen.
Well, it would certainly make my millennium.
That film I mentioned marked Burton's second feature film with the success of his 1985 debut, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, filled with what audiences around the world would come to recognize as the filmmaker's unique style. The fantasy comedy arrived just a year before Batman, a film that would elevate Burton's status from quirky, smaller-scale filmmaker to blockbuster director. With its horror elements and bizarre plot that involved a deceased couple forced to rely on an impish ghoul, played by Michael Keaton, to help them get rid of their beloved home of its living occupants, that film offered audiences a film unlike any previously seen, so much so that it continues to resonate with fans today.
Hey, he's regular getting calls on the horn all the time, showing up at shopping centers for openings, signing autographs, and shit like that.
Screenwriter Graham Smith, the Just Beyond writer, was asked why the second film has yet to happen despite its fan-favorite status. The reason that it's so hard to get going is because so many people love it and because there are 10 million ways to get the sequel wrong and 4 ways to get it right. It's such a very fine needle to thread, and I certainly, like, didn't get it there on the script side. I couldn't get it there personally as a writer, but maybe somebody else can.
Well, you gotta turn on the juice and see what shakes loose.
As previously revealed, both Keaton and Winona Ryder were willing to return for a sequel as long as Burton was directing, and it makes sense that there are so many ways that a sequel of this nature could go wrong, and recapturing the initial spark of the 88 film created an almost impossible feat. In recent years, beloved 80s film sequels or reboots have tended to land somewhat flat, though Pee-wee's Big Holiday did manage to gain a decent amount of acclaim.
Because it was a joy.
The alternate side of the argument, however, is that finding the right story to legitimize this film is such a challenge that it's an indication it doesn't need to happen in the first place. It's understandable to want more from a film that has provided so many with joy, but that alone is not necessarily enough to merit a sequel. Ultimately, if the project has no real reason to exist, its development will drag. Perhaps, then, it might just be time to let go of the idea of a sequel rather than risk creating something that doesn't match the strength of the original. That's why he won't do 2 shows a night anymore, babe. He won't! And without Glenn Shattuck, what the hell's the point? GRD is licensed to the Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, non-derived works, 9 States, 3 Points license. Come check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. Stop by the website at geekradiodaily.com.
Now, see, if you'd said his name 3 times, I would have read all of his lines in his voice.
Oh, so it was my fault the show sucked today. Sorry, everybody.
No, that's it fine. Didn't suck. That's... I thought it was strong at the beginning. It really faded towards the end, but it was strong at the beginning.
Fair enough. Candyman. Hey, drop us a note, won't you please? Tell us what's going on in your world and your life. It's podcast at geekradiodaily.com.
What the hell is all these bees?
Let's mail a text message. Use the magical numbers of
510-GRD.
Sammy Davis Jr.
And we'll see you at a different time.
What do you think? It stinks.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Good night, suckers.
Well, I thought every part of it was good, but overall I hated it.
I feel exactly the opposite, but the same.
It's again for a 30-second conspiracy theory.
John F. Kennedy was assassinated for one reason only, because he was obsessed with the dream of mass-producing an electric car. When the heads of the corporations of this country found out about his dream, they sent a lone gunman to Dallas. He drove there without stopping for gas once because he was driving in an electric car. With the death of John Kennedy, so died the dreams of the electric car. But it was reborn in his son, Robert Kennedy, and died again. And now the hopes and dreams of the electric car live on only in me. I will be assassinated on July 5th, 1994 by Lee Harvey Oswald III. He'll be driving an electric car.